Why does H&M double down on China when other multinationals are playing wait and see? What's behind their bold bet on brick and mortar stores in the world's most digitally advanced market? And why can't numbers alone explain China? Welcome to China Biz, the podcast that goes beyond the headlines to explore the real opportunities and challenges facing multinational companies in China. It's straight talk from insiders on the ground. In this episode, we sit down with Said El Akhtar, the president of H&M Group Greater China Retail and driving force behind H&M's China strategy. He warns about being fooled by numbers, swear by the power of physical retail, and says nothing can stop a Chinese company. My name is Jacob Johansson. I lived and done business in China for almost 25 years. I'm a strategy and business transformation consultant with PwC China. But let's be clear, this podcast is my private project, and the opinions shared here are solely my own. With that out of the way, let's dive in. We're sitting here in your beautiful office close to Renmin Square in the very heart of Shanghai. It's hard to imagine anything more central. But even though Renmin Square has been here for a long time, you haven't been here for that long. You are 2 years into your China role as CEO of H&M China.
Yeah, so still fresh. Compared to you, I'm still not born in that sense in China. Yeah.
So you came from leading H&M in Russia.
Yes. So a quick introduction of how long I've been with H&M. I've been with H&M soon to be 20 years. I started with H&M in Canada. H&M just arrived to Canada. We had already the first two stores open, and then I joined H&M in Canada. And I joined them part of the real estate department as a project manager in the construction department. You know, with my background as an architect, that was an automatic thing. And then I think it was like 2.5-3 years down the road when H&M decided to enter the Russian market. They asked for me to go to Russia since I spoke Russian as well. So I've been in Russia since 2008, starting up the country in that sense. Then I did sales training more towards the sales side of the business, not the real estate side of the business, between 2012 and 2013. And that was in London. And then I came back to Russia and became sales manager, country sales manager since 2014, and then CEO of Russia as a region as well until we closed in end of 22. And then beginning of 23, took over Greater China and moved here with the family.
Do you remember your first day at work in China?
It's unbelievable to a certain extent that I am here and the family is here. I'm Middle Eastern. I was born and raised in Lebanon. So for us, China is a very far place, something that you don't hear a lot about and you don't learn much about, unfortunately. So, growing up in this environment, and although we traveled the world and been in many places, we never came to China. The first day flying to China from Moscow, it was both a fear and excitement at the same time. Fear that you had no idea what's going to happen.
I remember that freak thing. For me, it was 25 years ago, but I remember standing in Pudong Airport, flabbergasted.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, and it's incredibly exciting, but especially when you're traveling with the family, and that was right when the COVID measures were taken out, and then you had no idea what you're getting yourself and the family into. The first thing that I realized the first day is that I have no idea how this works. It looks similar, but this is different. And then the first day I came to this office, I think it was the second day in China. It was also quite surprising. And into seeing how the office is structured, how everything works, how do people work here. The whole, you know, culture of working is also different than what we're used to. So it was a positive shock with a bit of fear and a lot of excitement.
Now you are 1.5 or a little bit more year into it. If you should start to summarize a couple of lessons, maybe on the backdrop of Russia, leading Russia, and now with your experience here, what would you pinpoint as the most interesting takeouts or maybe even the most different experiences you ever had here?
I think every day is a lesson in China. And I think, at least I can talk on behalf of myself. I don't know how it is for everyone else. But I think some of the mistakes that I've done, one of them is I started to compare China to other places in the world. In the sense of, well, we used to do this way. We do this way in other countries. I think this is a mistake. You should deal with China as a completely separate thing. Don't compare it. Just because you did it good somewhere else, like let's say, just because you did 1, 2, 3, you were able to get 4 somewhere else, this doesn't mean this is the way it's going to work here. So think of China as China. The second thing, the mistake that I've done that I probably should have done different or thought about it different, and I think a lot of foreigners fall into, is China resembles, the numbers in China say a completely different story than reality. So the 1.5 billion people, the second largest economy in the world, the fastest growing economy, all these kind of things, especially when you see it in your own eyes, looking at Shanghai, the skyscrapers, the Shanghai Tower, the amount of cars, you immediately start seeing dollar signs, you know, appearing in your eyes. And you think, wow, this is, you know, it stinks money. I'm in 2 days, I'm going to, you know, become the richest man in the world. It's not like that. It's not. Don't get fooled by that reality. And I think one of the reasons is that you're not alone. Everyone else, every one of those 1.5 billion people living here also is seeing that and want the same thing. So I think not to get confused with the obvious or what you see. And of course, I mean, it's different living habits, different shopping habits, different traditions that you have to open your mind on it in a positive way. And I think one more thing, and I'll stop at that, in the sense of, because I traveled the world and we always do the same mistakes, in the sense of you bring whatever culture and habit with you and you try to implement it wherever you go. You're not going to change the way of thinking of 1.5 billion people and the culture, which is more than 5,000 years. You have to change yourself and try to understand it as much as you can.
That's 3 excellent points. If I may just add some reflection. The first thing you say about bringing the best of Russia into China and thinking, because I did it there, I can do the same. I have a completely similar experience with, let me just here say, a global consumer electronics retailer, doesn't matter who, but they owned in China, and they just opened in Russia 10 years before.
All right.
And they sent the Russia chip, and they said exactly what you say now, that, oh, it cannot be that different, because sitting in the European headquarters, both Russia and China look completely alien. So if it worked in Russia, it should also work in China, because it's equally far away, and of course it didn't. And I don't say so much if I reveal that they're not in the market anymore. It took them much longer time to get to this conclusion than you have.
Yeah.
So good for you. I think they spent 3 years here without really taking lessons out. What they did instead of adapting was just to send more Europeans into the organization. So the organism was just growing, but it didn't create a better fit with the needs of the market. The other thing that makes me smile in your explanation is this thing about the numbers of China and the reality of China. I meet many CEOs who say, this is my headache. At home, they read the statistics, they see the numbers, it's all grandiose, but the reality running a foreign business here is very complex. And it's very hard to translate the numbers into hardcore business or business resource. So some foreign CEOs I know here, they feel very frustrated. How do I convey this message? How do I make my headquarters back home truly understand that this is going to be harder than it looks, but also that it's still worth it. Because it's either that people are over-optimistic or overly pessimistic these days. But there are something in the middle where there are both opportunities here, but you have to accept that it's going to be a struggle if you want to be relevant. It's no secret right now if we look at, now I say retail, but I know H&M, of course, is to your core and your culture and your soul, a fashion brand, but of course a key component in your distribution and your customer connect is physical stores. Everybody who look at retail in China the last 12, 24 months knows that things are not as progressive as they used to be. We are sort of in a wait and see. In this tough market, I see a lot of foreign retailers cut or close. But you are investing. H&M has an inbound investment and a positive approach to what you can do here. I think a lot of the people listening to this, this is what they want to know. What is it you see here that those people who haven't made it or who are reluctant cannot see?
I mean, this is a very interesting position and point of view, especially with me starting by saying that you shouldn't look too much at the numbers and believe in them. But there are certain things that they are realistic and you have to take them into consideration. One thing is that, I mean, this is China we're talking about. This is the second largest economy. And in certain industries, this is the number one economy. Look at the EV market and where China is. Look at the AI market and where China is. Look at the tech market and where China is. And even the retail market to many, the e-commerce market, the marketplaces and how everything works. So you should not underestimate that. And you should not underestimate the progress of this market. I think what we believe in, look, H&M is in it for the long term. H&M has been around for now 77 years. This is not a small company. This is not, you know, it's not yesterday's company in that sense. And if we do something, of course, it's for the long term. It's for bringing fashion to the many. It is our philosophy continues to be we provide fashion at the best price, at the right quality in a sustainable way. And this is relevant for the market in China, for our customers in China. And this is why we continue to invest in the market, but we, of course, invest wisely. It's a different investment profile than what we used to have in the past. It's no longer about growth of number of stores and taken locations. It's more about making sure that you are investing in your existing portfolio, rebuilding it, making sure it's relevant for the customer, upgrading certain aspects of it, investing into brand awareness, making sure that we are collaborating with the right channels, such as what we've done with Shanghai Fashion Week and Garçon by Garçon on last fall, such as rebuilding of our East Nanjing store. I mean, that store we had, it was run down, it was tired, but it's a fantastic location.
It's a fantastic show.
Exactly. So yes, we go in, we invested a lot of money into upgrading the store and making it relevant to what the consumer right now is looking for and making it interesting for the consumer to walk in and enjoy their time while they are in this location. And a lot of other projects that we have done through the year. These are investments into your existing portfolio, so it's not money wasted on air in that sense. And at the same time, it's an investment in your brand for the long term.
Right.
The highest stage of the funnel where we are top of mind. People continue to know about this and people, hopefully, they will like us for what we are doing. And eventually, you know this very well, that the economy will turn around, whether we like it or not. And we are here for our customers in China when that happens.
For my life in China, it's just tomorrow was always better than yesterday. And that gave birth to an optimism that I have not experienced anywhere else. But I have another observation, and that is that as agile and quick China has been and the Chinese work culture or business culture has been to adapt to progress and better times,
yeah,
constantly improving. Almost as rigid
some of the local companies are in terms of adjusting to a negative situation.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that a lot of Chinese business leaders I work with, they pride themselves of being more agile. And that was true when there was only one direction. But I must say, I see Chinese also in retail businesses where leadership is more fumbling or insecure on what decisions to make and what actions to implement when it's about cutting or rethinking your business in a harsher environment. So maybe the foreign calls, yeah, where you used to cyclists, cover, you know, coming and going, uptime and downtime, this has made those type of companies a little more agile in terms of quick turnaround.
100%. And agility is an incredibly important role that you play, whether it's China or anywhere else in the world. I mean, we are in a very, turbulent time around the world. This we cannot close our eyes on. And everything is changing constantly. So you have to be agile. But the fashion industry by itself is an incredibly fast industry. This is an ever-changing industry.
Yeah.
You can only survive if you are agile in the decisions that you take and the collections that you launch and the changes that you do. You are as good as fast as you can be in that sense, on how fast you can actually change. And we always keep in mind is that, whatever I'm doing today is the best that I have. What I will do tomorrow will be better than what I've done today. So I think it is a mindset.
It's also a willingness to take a couple of bullets.
For sure.
Which I think some multinationals are maybe a little bit afraid of. Again, maybe because they have unrealistic expectations towards what China is. But in every new market, especially a foreign market, it's almost arrogant not to expect to have a take a couple of bullets and learn the hard way.
Yeah.
We also see the Chinese companies, some of the car brands going west, they're also taking bullets. In the European market, finding their feet in a different business culture.
100%. But someone said it when it comes to the Chinese market and taking bullets and the influence of the Chinese markets and how the Chinese market is constantly reacting and changing and developing. And I'm not going to take the credit for it, but it was a fantastic quote that I heard in the sense of, if you are, as a foreign company, a multinational company, if you, whatever hardship you're going through in China today, you should know that this hardship is going to come to you wherever you are in the world. So if you're not able to figure it out today in China, or at least learn from it, just keep in mind that it's coming to you wherever you are. And we see that. I mean, you have, you know, big Chinese companies such as Shein, such as Tmall, TikTok with this influence around the world. I mean, this is not small things. And if you're not able to figure it out in China and react properly, be agile on it as a multinational company, or at least, learn from it, because it is coming to your doorstep.
And if you want or have to compete with Chinese companies, there's no better place to learn.
Exactly.
Than here. Right?
So then you can look at China in many different ways. It's also it's an opportunity and a school at the same time.
But it's interesting. I would like to just touch upon some of the things you're doing differently here in China, both in terms of what H&M used to do in China, but maybe also compared to the rest of the world. And let's start with your Nanjingdu flagship store. I've seen that shop and that corner all my years here. It's, for those who are listening at home who don't know, Shanghai, Nanjingdu is the most trafficked pedestrian street in the world. Try to explain what you have done with that location and how come in such a digital environment you put so relatively many resources into one physical location.
For sure. I mean, this is one of the locations that we will be, that we have reinvested in. And of course, in the coming future, there's a lot more that is coming. Such similar flagships in key cities around China as part of our strategy and repositioning ourselves in the market and being closer to the customer from an experience perspective and from a visibility perspective as well. It was a bit of a rundown store, and it was not very visible, and the layouts from the inside as well were not convenient for the customers. And in line with our brand direction globally, and us becoming more relevant for our customers, and a better fashion destination, we rechanged all the layouts, removed a lot of The perimeter walls that were creating more borders for our customers made the shopping experience extremely transparent. When you're walking on the street of East Nanjing, you see our clear windows and you feel you are on a walkway in a fashion show. So it's a lot about inspiration, about experience, about customer flow inside the store, presenting all our latest fashions on landing places. And of course, providing services, you know, much more fitting rooms, much more cash points in that sense, and making it a much nicer experience in general for the customer, and making it more visible from the outside. So, you know, we're talking about our logos, we put advertisement, we just did it, actually took us some time to get the logo on the exterior of the shopping center to be more visible. There's a bit of, you know, some of the old retail aspects that you want to maintain of what is, you know, regular retail. And of course, the new designs of our locations to make it more relevant for our customers.
But you had also consolidated your number of stores in China as selling points, right?
I mean, it's I wouldn't call it consolidation. It's more on any, like in any business, you have a big portfolio of stores, you know, lease and dates they come, situation changes in certain locations. This shopping center, for example, used to perform, had a lot of footfall. Today it doesn't. There's no reason for you to stay in a location if it's not a good experience for your customers and it's not bringing the value that it should. Otherwise, you're hurting your own business at the end of the day, and you're creating a worse experience for your customers. So yeah, some portfolio stores we are closing, some we are opening. So it's a constant optimization and looking around our portfolio to make sure that we are relevant for the customer. And I think every business does that, and every business should be doing this to stay healthy and relevant, for sure.
It's a flow.
I mean, you cannot stay the same for 50 years. It's the world is changing. So you change with it. But the positive sign is that we are going towards a more healthy portfolio. We're opening flagships. We don't call them flagships anymore. We're opening such locations that are more relevant for our consumers in prime locations and key cities.
And that's a trend you see across retail in China in general. I was there, even in EVs, where like NIO domestic EV brand have NIO houses in key locations around all over China, where they lift the store concept to a new height, I would say. They prioritize opening, you know, flagship store, whatever we call it, but more significant presence that offer more than just products and shopping, but maybe also an experiential level. And you see that also in fashion. You see that in other parts of retail, that in some ways there is a consolidation, not necessarily driven by optimization or costs alone, but also that the consumers want something different from the interaction today than they used to.
No, for sure. And especially in China, where everything is changing constantly. And I think the worst thing that you can do is be stuck to, you know, one strategy and just continue with it. So, similar to the EV companies and other retailers, we want to stay relevant, healthy, sustainable in many ways, and not lose on that.
What's your experience from that new flagship store, that customers are going for the destination? So they're actually, if the destination, if the physical interaction is interesting enough, they're willing to travel a little bit further? Or do you still feel that it's very important to be a corner shop and physically very accessible? Which direction do you see this going?
I mean, for the East Nanjing location, of course, it's completely different than the rest of the world. You can, the East Nanjing road, with the amount of people that are walking in it, you are automatically getting a huge amount of visitors in that sense. So it becomes here, of course, location is important and visibility is important to the customers or to the past buyers or the walking people in the street. They will go in whether you like it or not. And then it's all about what kind of experience you're providing, what kind of customer service, how's your communication inside the store. Different locations, different requirements in that sense, or different logic to it and how do you make it work. But for such a high traffic street, similar to Fifth Avenue, similar to Champs-Élysées, similar to, yeah, so it's the traffic will be there. Now it's about what is it that you want to do inside the store. Coming back to your question, when it comes to the digital, and you know, in such a country or market where digital takes a big share of the market, and we continue to invest in a physical portfolio, this is one of the things that you should be careful with in China when it comes to the numbers and how it looks. When I first came here, I thought, I mean, that's it. It's just digital. There's nothing else. But then you start digging into it, and it's a completely different aspect. I think China fashion retail average, not H&M only, but when you look at it everywhere, I think it's still above the 70% physical and probably less than the 30% digital, which means that the customer in China still wants to go to the store. They still want to go to the shopping center. It's a destination.
This is interesting, right? Because the narrative about China is digital, digital, digital.
I think
e-commerce. Yeah. So you say, especially within fashion, that you still see a very strong desire to be part of a physical shopping experience.
100%. And that's, again, I'm not talking numbers H&M. If we talk about fashion and what we see out there from all players, it is very much still a physical store oriented. And again, when you look at it, people are living out there. A lot of people live in apartments, maybe even small apartments. The only way that you are able to, and you live with, and you know how it is in China, you're living, if you're married, you have your in-laws with you to take care of the kids. So it's your only way out is the shopping center in that sense, especially in the hot weather or in the cold weather.
Right.
So it's still a destination. I think for the longest time, this will not change. So it's no longer, it could be that I go to the shopping center to shop per se, to buy a product, but it's more, I go to the shopping center to spend time. So I think I believe a lot of the fashion businesses are very much dependent still on the retail.
Yeah. And as on top of that, especially within fashion, digital is, let's just call it the way it is, it to be profitable in digital fashion commerce is just really, really tough, because many Chinese consumers are using online shopping as an extended try room just ordering 5 different sizes, 5 different colors, and returning 95% of it and keeping 1 or 2 pieces. And that's, of course, logistics-wise, cost-wise, manpower-wise. It must be an enormous challenge.
Definitely. I mean, the bigger you grow, maybe the better it gets. Like in our size, it's not that bad in that sense. We're still, we're doing good on that side of the business. But of course, it's a different shopping experience. Completely. Like when you shop on Tmall, when you shop on Taobao, when you shop on JD, when you shop on most of the platforms, your search habits are different. You are very much product oriented. There is no inspiration in that sense. I personally use it as a social media platform in the sense of I sit and look on what people are selling. So it's a completely different experience in that sense than the one that you provide in the shopping centers and in your stores, especially if they are unique stores in that sense. So I think both of them will coexist for a long time. Physical retail might lose a bit of percentages towards digital. But as long as the experience is different, you will continue to see a positive trend in physical retail.
It may also be that the conversion that is moving digital, but the physical stores still play an extremely critical role in terms of test and try and look at things, right? Which there are certain things that digital is very good at, but there are also things that physical is better at. And sometimes people forget this in the strive for e-commerce success. But they create an e-commerce presence, which is a copy of the physical store, or vice versa. But probably digital is stronger on ease of transaction, where physical provides human interaction, a lot of other things which are less tangible, but super important to Chinese consumers.
Definitely. Nothing beats going to a store, selecting 20 products, going to the fitting room and trying them on. Nothing beats that. It's just, it will continue for the longest time. But I think the misunderstanding that comes to digital in China is yes, China is a very digitalized country. There's nowhere in the world that you will be able to order something now and get it in 10 minutes that fast. And you have a, it's not just one thing. You can order whatever the hell you want.
Yeah.
That you will not find anywhere else in the world. So, and this, and it's not just the ordering and the purchase and the buying. It's like using WeChat with all its mini apps, integrating payment system. The fintech is a completely different level here. And your whole life, like, you know, paying fines for driving, even buying a you know, a license plate for your, everything is digitalized. So yes, when you look at it, everything is digitalized in China. There's a huge digital presence that you have to respect. But when it comes to fashion retail, because it's more of an experience and a feeling driven market or direction or industry, here physical retail still wins in that sense.
Very interesting conclusion.
Yeah.
I would like to ask you about Douyin, Chinese TikTok.
Yeah. It's a very interesting marketplace. It's a completely different experience. It's very much social media oriented, in the sense of it's all about videos, it's all about content, it's all about working with influencers. So we are in the position, like, we're happy with where we are. We are in the position where we want to learn more about how Douyin works and how does the consumer on Douyin react to a lot of things. How is the communication line aligned? Which stage of the funnel you're mostly targeting when you're working with Douyin? How do you showcase your brand and the brand experience? So there's a lot to learn from it. It's not similar to any other marketplaces.
No. It's a completely different approach to e-commerce than having a shared snapshot of a product and color choices and put it out there and people click on a window. This is interaction.
Yeah, this is interaction. It's very good with building loyalty, with building integrity, with building native content, in the sense of you're working with influencers, you're working with people who are speaking on your behalf. It's good if the customer also takes that upon themselves. But it is an interesting place. A lot to learn here.
Are you happy with your conversion numbers? And we're not here to discuss the numbers, but in general, if you look at what you do on Douyin, is this interesting? Is it going the right way?
Yeah. No, for sure. We are happy with all our marketplaces. I mean, we are on Tmall. We added JD, Jingdong. We added Douyin. We added Pinduoduo. On Pinduoduo, we are the first international retailer, fashion retailer. No, we're happy with all our platforms. Definitely, we're going in the right direction in that sense. And that's very interesting because they are all very different. And you are targeting different consumers.
Yeah.
And different shopping experiences. So there's also a lot for us to learn from here.
What's driving traffic? And now I think Douyin, but also your physical store, is it your brand that drives the traffic or is it the goods?
I mean, any brand in the world would wish for it to be the brand. But of course, it's also the product. I think it's in a good combination. It should work 50-50 in that sense. We are providing, you know, fashion product, quality product at a good price in a sustainable way. So there's a lot of reasons that our product is interesting for our customers. We provide the latest fashion. We are relevant. We are there for what the customer needs in many sense and perspective, but it's also the brand that has also shown a credibility in the fashion world in many occasions and in many of our collaborations and the collections that we launch constantly. I would say you hope for both.
If we look at the competitive landscape, and again, you're the fashion expert, but if I look more broadly on retail, but also automotive and other industries that I interact with in my professional job, there's no question that since COVID, the domestic competition has really raised it to the equation. The competitive landscape, the domestic competitive landscape in China is just much more qualified and professional, both in terms of service and innovation and product quality and, you know, every aspect of running a business than they used to be. And at least from my perspective, part of this reason is that foreign companies during the COVID years sort of played wait and see with China, because we had other markets we could invest in and focus on. But the Chinese, the domestic companies, had nowhere to go. So they have upped their game here. And across a variety of industries, at least that's at least my observation. I don't know if you agree, of course, but it is that domestic competition is just much tougher. 20 years ago, H&M could walk into China and say, made in Europe or made in Sweden. And it was enough to come in and say, we are imported, we are foreign. Yeah. That doesn't go so easy anymore, right?
No, for sure.
And I think we go back to point one where we said you shouldn't be fooled with the numbers. Because of the competition as well. And I think it has to do, I believe, so I could be wrong again, I'm only 2 years here, but it's in the sense of, it's also a cultural thing. I think Chinese companies are incredibly talented, strong. They know exactly what is it that they want, and they would do anything to get there. It's a completely different working ethics in the sense of we get things done and we win any competition that we're in attitude. And they do it in the right way, in the right direction. We see a lot of competition that are very relevant from a fashion perspective, product perspective, presentation, very good locations, very inspiring content. And nothing that you can say, nothing that you can point your finger on and say, well, this is nothing. No, they're strong. And it goes back to, again, I think the culture, the strength that they have, and the knowledge, the education, the competition spirit. So I'm not sure if it's COVID, to be honest with you, that stopped. I think this would have happened anyways.
Okay.
Just because of where China is going. I mean, I don't want to sound philosophical about it, but I think what China has been able to achieve over the last 30 years, there's no other country in the world that has been able to achieve. It's a complete turnaround to become, you know, a leading economy in the world, one of the top. So that you cannot argue with in that sense. As it was just a matter of time. Interesting book by Kai-Fu Lee, who I think it's called New World Order, talking about AI. And there he talks about competition and the mindset of Chinese companies, talking about more tech companies such as Tencent, Alibaba. And then it shows you it's fierce competition.
Yeah.
Nothing can stop a Chinese company.
No.
Then you can argue, okay, so what are we doing here? But this is the thing, is that we are, I think you should focus on what you're good at instead of trying to, you know, fight with everyone around. We are good. We are world leaders when it comes to fashion and quality at the best price in a sustainable way. We have an incredible sustainable agenda that we have been pioneers in the fashion industry when it comes to sustainability. We provide the latest fashion, whether it's through our collaborations that we have been doing for the last 20 plus years, or our studios, or our drops, or our collections that we launch. We have incredibly talented people that bring the latest fashion to the doorsteps of our consumers. We launched officially launched our design hub last year in November on the CIE. But we've been working with our local design hub here in Shanghai for several years now, you know, building up to the point that we believe we're able to launch it. Of course, we on all customer groups, on men's, ladies, and kids, and divided, which is a younger concept. We have local collections produced here in China, designed in China, produced in China for the Chinese customer. But it's not only for China. This goes to all Asia. We also utilize this for other markets around the world. So we give our consumers or our customers here in China both, you know, the global trends that I think they're coming for, because we represent a global fashion company, but also locally relevant collections that go in line as what's happening with the country, such as the Chinese New Year collection that we just launched, which was incredibly perceived by our customers. And, you know, through we see this through numbers, through likes, through reactions. Mm. When you do these kind of things that are relevant for the consumer through culture and people, you see the good results. Yeah.
It's an interesting balance because I have also seen Western companies try to tackle the challenges of the situation by being almost more Chinese than the Chinese, localizing everything. But from my perspective, you don't, pardon the word, but beat the Chinese by try to be more Chinese than they are if you are a global company. You have to find that balance between what is it in our international DNA that is relevant for the users and where do we need to bend and reshape to make sure that we have a right to play here, right?
No, for sure. I think my humble opinion, and again, on behalf of myself, I say that, not representing anyone here, but I think that the biggest mistakes most companies do or CEOs do is when you start focusing more on your competition than your own customer.
Mm.
Instead of focusing on your competitor and how you're going to beat them, why don't you focus on your customer, what exactly they want and how can you win them? Yes, competition is there and it's healthy to be. When we, this is not a secret, when whether it's us or Zara or Uniqlo or anyone, when we go into shopping centers, one of the first things we ask is who else is going to be there from our, global competition. And if they're not there, we're not happy. We want to be there with them because we are creating retail corridors.
Yeah.
So you should be happy that you have competition. Focus on your customer and what does your customer want and how can you be relevant for your customer?
Yeah. And if you manage to do the retail experience, the in-store experience well and have the right goods on the shelves, hopefully the conversion will follow, right?
Yeah.
But if the traffic is not there, then retail can't deliver. I know you don't want to reveal your long-term strategy, but is there anything, two or three things you want to highlight that it's in your pipeline, things that this is next for H&M?
I don't mind revealing my long-term strategy, Jacob. It's the same strategy that has been around for 77 years. We provide fashion and quality at the best price in a sustainable way. We liberate fashion for the many. And we are here to present a fashionable lifestyle for our consumers all around the world. This is what we do, and this is our strategy. And then you can question, okay, how do I want to do this? Is it through physical retail, through online? It will be through both, because this is where the customer is. We want to be wherever the customer is.
Yeah,
I want to be. It doesn't matter which channel. If it could be a hypothetical channel that doesn't exist now. If it's going to exist, I want to be that, if my customer is there. For China, there's a lot of interesting things in the pipeline. We signed Huaihai Road.
New flagship store.
It used to be our store before, and we left. Now we're back. And I think this is the point, is that we are back. We are back in the greatest locations that exist in Shanghai, in that sense. It will be incredibly interesting. I think after we open it, the whole world will be talking about that location. And there's a lot of other locations as well around the country. We signed another location in Shenzhen. We're looking into a lot of other major cities. CAT continue developing our marketplaces and platforms. And if there's any platforms that we feel are interesting, we're more than happy to knee on them. It's not about having an exact to the point plan in front of you to check the boxes. You go back to the philosophy of, I want to be where my customer is.
Yes.
And I want to be relevant for my customer. And I want to gain the trust and the loyalty of my customer. If you achieve all of this, and if you are going towards this, I think everything will be good.
There.
Yeah.
I smile a little bit because with all its simplicity, this is really what it's all about.
Yeah.
In my book, From Customer to User, I write about a principle I call bring business to people. Because I've seen a lot of businesses in China being more focused on channels and technologies that actually understand where the users want you to be. And sometimes it can be a tremendous help just to simplify things. So there's a couple of principles here that where we need to meet a certain standard. And if we do that, we make it at least easier for ourselves to succeed in this market. Where is it relevant that we have a presence and then do it really well?
100%. And it definitely should not be complicated. Fashion is a lifestyle. It's not a complication. And it's based on feelings.
Yeah.
if you complicate it too much, then you lose the essence of it. That's, again, that's my opinion. This is the way we see it, and this is the way we are progressing, and we see good results, so we're happy with how everything is developing.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
With those words, we have reached the end of this episode. ChinaBiz will be back soon. Remember to subscribe to our podcast and recommend us to your network. If you have feedback or ideas, feel free to connect with me on WeChat. You can find my WeChat ID in the description or connect with me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening.